Welcome back to Through the Word. I'm your host, Peyton Jones, and today we'll be looking at John chapter 18, where Jesus is falsely accused of crimes we truly committed. Today, we'll watch Jesus take the blame for something he didn't do. Now, we've got a lot of ground to cover, so let's jump straight in at verse 1. When he had finished praying, Jesus left with his disciples and crossed the Kidron Valley. On the other side, there was a garden, and he and his disciples went into it. Now Judas, who betrayed him, knew the place, because Jesus had often met there with his disciples. So Judas came into the garden, guiding a detachment of soldiers and some officials from the chief priests and the Pharisees. They were carrying torches, lanterns, and weapons. Remember, the disciples are walking out from the upper room. Jesus had just been telling them he's leaving, but on the way, he talked to them about abiding in him and kept talking about a character called the Helper that would be with them to help them. And finally, as he crosses the brook Kidron, one of the streams that lay on the valley floor, as it glistens in the moonlight, you cross it with Jesus and begin the ascend up to the other side of the hill known as the Mount of Olives, where all you want is some sleep. You're still groggy from a long night of celebrating the Passover, full of wine and eating a big Passover meal. As you're trying to get some sleep and just nodding off, suddenly you see Judas. You think to yourself, gosh, that errand he was sent on sure did take a long time, but is that a detachment of soldiers? Oh no. What kind of trouble has Judas gotten himself into? Maybe Jesus can straighten it out. But no, you see some officials from the chief priests and Pharisees. And then you look back at Judas again. And somehow you know. Judas brought them here. That's the moment that your gut sinks. Verse 4. Jesus, knowing all that was going to happen to him, went out and asked them, "Who is it you want?" "Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "I am he," Jesus said. And Judas the traitor was standing there with them. When Jesus said, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground. Whoa! Did Jesus just use the name of God, "I am," or Yahweh in Hebrew, when he said who he was? Shocked and stunned, the soldiers stumble to their feet and ask again, but this time Jesus doesn't blow them away. He replies in verse 8, "I told you I am he. If you are looking for me, then let these men go." This happened so the words he had spoken would be fulfilled. "I have not lost one of those you gave me." And if you're one of the disciples, you remember that back in the upper room, Jesus had prayed, "I've not lost one of those you gave me, except the son of perdition." You'd wonder then what he meant. And then with the sinking feeling in the pit of your stomach, you also understand now who the son of perdition was. Judas. Now this is important for John to tell us, because it's not just that Jesus didn't lose one of them. It's that because of who Jesus is, he won't lose any of us. But in the heat of the moment, there's no time to dwell on that. Suddenly, a flurry of movement out of the corner of your eye as Simon's sword strikes off a man's ear, and through his shouting and pain, we hear Jesus in verse 11, "Put your sword away. Shall I not drink the cup the Father has given to me?" Whatever it is, suffering, pain, injustice, or death, Jesus seems prepared to drain that cup to its last dregs. John and Peter follow as Jesus is dragged off to be tried by the high priest. The details in this next section are only those that an eyewitness would give, so detailed and descriptive. You'll hear John refer to himself as another disciple. But what John is going to tell us is not easy. Part of it involves the suffering of one friend, Jesus. And adding to that pain, it also involves the betrayal of Jesus by yet another friend, Peter. You can read about Peter's first denial of Jesus as Peter stands around the fire to warm himself. But like a master storyteller, John leaves Peter and himself by the fire outside in the courtyard and takes us back inside to the trial where Jesus stands accused. And as he's questioned, Jesus replies in verse 20, "I have spoken openly to the world," Jesus replied. "I always taught in the synagogues or at the temple, where all the Jews come together. I said nothing in secret. Why question me? Ask those who heard me. Surely they know what I said." They slap him around for this and send him on to Pilate. But like a Star Wars film flashing from scene to scene, one set of characters to another, John brings us back outside by the fire again in verse 25, where we hear the second denial. Meanwhile, Simon Peter was still standing there warming himself. So they asked him, "You aren't one of his disciples too, are you?" He denied it, saying, "I am not." Bam! The second denial. And Peter doesn't even realize what he's done until a third one asks in verse 27. Again, Peter denied it. And at that moment, a rooster began to crow. And you know what? John alone in his account spares us from watching Peter weep bitterly, unlike the other Gospels, perhaps because his good friend, his best friend, experienced the pain of it every time this story was told. Thank God for best friends. Back inside to Jesus' trial in verse 29. So Pilate came out to them and asked, "What charges are you bringing against this man?" They sent him to Pilate because he was the only man with the authority to execute Jesus. But Pilate doesn't want to hear the case, and the Jews don't want to get in trouble for murder. The problem is, and Pilate knows it, Jesus hasn't done anything wrong. But what the Pharisees knew is that Jesus claimed to be the Messiah, the King of the Jews, and that could be a threat to Caesar's claim to be the Emperor God. So the Pharisees press Pilate on this. And after that, Pilate goes back into the palace and asks Jesus in verse 33, "Are you the King of the Jews?" Skip forward to verse 36. Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now, my kingdom is from another place." "You are a king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." "What is truth?" retorted Pilate. You can hear the cynical knee-jerk reaction of a man who has had people lie to him his entire career so that they could get ahead or to save the head they've got. Either way, somewhere along the line, Pilate had stopped believing in the truth. What is truth? If only in his life he had encountered the one, this one, who had claimed to be the way, the truth, and the life, he would have found all three. But on that day, truth is a meaningless word whose life had been sucked out, leading Pilate to feel the same. He had lost his way. But Pilate knows one truth. Jesus is not guilty of anything. And so he finds a loophole. He can release one prisoner a year at Passover, and the Jewish people love this normally. But when he asks the crowd if they want him to release Jesus, they shout, "No, not him. Give us Barabbas, a terrible criminal who is about to bring the Roman wrath down on their heads." What is truth? No wonder Pilate had stopped believing that people told the truth anymore. Today, for him, is just another day where people bend the truth to suit their own needs. To Pilate, nothing in his life today or about Jesus is making sense. And there we leave this chapter, friends. The trial ongoing, the verdict out, and Pilate in a dilemma, the same dilemma we all face at some point in our lives. What to do with Jesus?
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, Faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.